News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Sunday, the 4th of May, Anno Domini 2008. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can lose, things to choose.
Stuff you can abuse. Stuff can you lose?
Okay.
It's all right.
Sounded good.
It does. See, it sounded good, and that's really
flows.
All that counts.
It
exactly. It flows. Yeah. It's poetic. It's not haiku, but it's poetry.
Alliteration.
Yeah, exactly. That wasn't alliteration.
I was going to say, let's not get carried away here.
Right. Nattering nabobs of negativism is. At any rate, it's never mind. It's a William Sapphire.
N-A-B-O-B-S, right?
Nabobs, yeah.
Okay, I'll look it up later.
Nattering nabobs of negativism. At any rate, you've all gotten bounce back messages, and we're starting to see them get bigger and bigger and bigger, more and more of them every day. And they're
going on for months.
Things like Cialis, Viagra, Levitra, unsolicited bulk email, apparently coming from you. What's going on? Have you been hacked? Are you some kind of zombie botnet spammer? No, you're just getting a little backscatter. They're bounce back messages from legitimate email servers that have been fooled by the spammer. Spammers like to put fake information in their email messages in order to sneak them past email filters. Because email filters now just delete messages that come from non-existent domains. So if I send an email message from abcde.com, which probably doesn't exist. I know there will be dozens of you now looking it up, prove me wrong. But something that, Steve's looking it up right now, that doesn't exist. Most email servers now know it's got to be spam. They just drop it. It's just gone. It never gets delivered. Nobody ever sees it. So what's the point of that?
Does that mean not even an attempt is made to deliver it?
Right.
Because
they check back. And if that domain does not exist.
Okay.
You know it's spam.
Well, in the olden days, yesterday?
Yeah.
the mail server would send you back a bounce error saying, this message can't be delivered.
That's my point.
And that's the way it was supposed to work.
Right. Yeah. And if it's a non-existent domain, they just dump it.
Right, because you might have spelled it wrong.
Right. Yep. Yeah. So what they're doing now is finding your email address somewhere on the web. And so many of us have put our email addresses on the web in some way.
Mm-hmm.
They then take that email address and make it look like it came from there. Now, what happens is it goes to the email server, and sometimes it gets delivered, but sometimes it doesn't because they send it to 100 billion names at that address. And some of them will then, the email server will say, oh, like Nick at AskNick.com. Well, right, AskNick.com is a legitimate domain. I will send this back politely saying this is not a real message. Now, it comes back to me, and I say, oh, this bounced back. I open it, I get caught, right? If this is... Because now I've seen the spam.
Right. Now you look like the spammer to outside observers.
Well, not only that, but also when it comes back to me, if I open it, I see the spam. The spammers have, in fact, hit somebody. Me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's called backscatter. When spammers send something out with your name and you get an unable to deliver message, that's called backscatter.
Well, and it's so hard to filter that in your own mail because some of those bounce errors are because you did misspell something and want that message to be sent.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly right. So you find yourself, particularly if you're like me and you send hundreds of messages a day, you can't say, well, I don't know what this one is. You got to open it. You got to look at it. Sophos, which is an antivirus company, they say that backscatter makes up just 2 or 3% of all spam, but they're also all the anti-spam vendors, rather, are saying that these messages are on the rise. Backscatter rarely hits more than one or two employees at the same time, so it isn't particularly disruptive, but it's mostly a psychological thing right now. Because they come from legitimate mail servers, they can cause special problems. Some security researchers believe that spammers have been intentionally sending messages that will be bounced back as a way to sneak around spam filters, because some mail servers bounce back the original message as part of their notice. So I will see that original message. Now, if it's spam, it's just... You know, I'll open up a message saying undeliverable. I open it up. I see something for Cialis. I just dump it. But what if that had some sort of Java. Well, let me just say this to all of you out there right now. If you're actually enabling JavaScript in your email program, you deserve whatever happens to you.
Well, a lot of,
I'm honest about that.
Well, and some folks don't realize that they are.
HTML mail, too. You can make your mail look really pretty and put fonts and colors and sizes and formatting. And you're not sending mail anymore. You're sending a web page.
Right.
And that's how the bad guys send viruses.
They send it disguised as a web page.
Yeah.
Most of them have JavaScript off by default. You would have to turn it on. If you did that, turn it off. Also,
should you tell them briefly how to do it?
Right. It depends on your email program.
See, they're all using Thunderbird.
All using Thunderbird?
Yes.
Well, then you just
We don't deal with IE, do we?
Right. Under the View menu, go to Messages, and you have three choices. Plain text, full HTML, it's not called full HTML, or partial HTML or something. The one I'm in the middle of reading.
I am in the middle
of reading
that particular... You're done reading it.
I'm not done reading it.
Nick, where's your backup?
Jesus, my backup. Actually, I could get it. I could get it, but not that quickly.
Somebody stole the mouse pad.
Yeah, right. It is a problem that can be fixed. Here's the one I hate, and I understand that people do this because it is polite. The out-of-office messages.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. If I'm a spammer and I send you a Cialis ad and you send me back an out-of-office reply, I've hit a real user. Yep. I know you're there.
Head of course.
They're doing a headcount.
You're gold. You're gold to me now.
I once heard, in fact, it was a local guy, had a story about bounce back messages. He tried to send a file to someone and went on vacation. Well, the file was too big for the other end to receive, so it sent a message back. This file's too big, and sent the file back to him. His out-of-office message sent the file back to the first place, saying I'm out of the office, which then wouldn't accept it because it's too big. It kept bouncing back and forth until both mail servers crashed.
Yep.
Holy moly.
Yeah. And that, of course, is a big thing, is the whole out-of-office. Well, yep. I just talked a little bit about that. But sending files through email, big files, it's a very bad idea. We had a person at work who sent gigantic files to people, all on our server, all in the Saunders College of Business. It took us the longest time to teach that individual. You put the file on, we have a shared drive for everybody. You put the file on the shared drive and just tell them it's there.
And the same thing is possible on the internet. There are a lot of file sharing sites. That's one of the very few legitimate uses for, say, LimeWire. But there are file sharing sites that you upload your file to them. In fact, your internet service provider gives you space on your account to send files. You just have to learn how to do something called FTP.
Right.
Which is why the web-based one's a little easier. But it's much easier to send files that way than you don't clog up the email.
Right. And so that's the kind of thing that we all need to understand. Backscatter is extremely hard to filter out. The problem can, of course, be fixed. It really should be. Oh, and those challenge response messages.
Oh, yeah.
You know, people are saying, well, I can't accept your message until you tell me you're a legitimate user. Well, you know what? Sorry, I dumped those automatically. I don't ever, ever do those because I don't know if that's a legitimate address I'm sending it back to. I don't know if you've been captured by one of the bots, and you're now collecting addresses from live users.
Have you heard about the CAPTCHA issue? To get a free Hotmail account or get a free Yahoo account, you have to look at the picture and type in what those letters mean to prove you're real. Well, apparently, we're hearing stories about hacker sites have set up like strip poker or something where if you type in these CAPTCHAs, they show you naked ladies. And so they're getting thousands of people to type in these CAPTCHAs that then the bad guys take over to Yahoo and use to get a free account to send more spam.
Right.
So the human-powered verification doesn't work either.
Right. So it's a very tough problem right now. But if I see out of office, it's gone. I don't even see those messages.
I almost don't care if you're out of the office, but
yeah, I really don't.
My boss has set a dangerous precedent by checking her mail every minute. And if she doesn't respond to an email within a minute, someone will go somewhere else and buy something.
Yeah, right.
And then we hear an hour later when she does get back to them, oh, I bought it already because you didn't respond to my email. Well, you sent it an hour ago.
Yeah, right. It's my favorite of the people who, did you get my email? When did you send it? just before the meeting. Okay, I walked across campus. You walked down the hall. So, no, I didn't get your email with the agenda for this meeting.
That you should have sent out more than a minute before the meeting.
Exactly. Well, years and years and years ago, I will not mention any names, but I'll guarantee there's 100 people out there.
You risk getting me started, too.
Who know this story. We put in, at a place I worked, we put in a network, first one that they had ever had, and people had email. And there was this one individual who was very, very close to retirement. And we taught her how to use email, and she could not have been happier. She would type people messages, and she would hit enter, and then she would race across the floor as fast as this elderly individual could race, run into their cubicle and scream at the top of her lungs, "Did you get my email?" You'd hear this all day. You'd be talking to somebody or working in your cubicle here. "Did you get my email?"
Was she trying to beat the electrons?
She just was so excited. And it was really, it came from the heart. She was so excited to be in the 20th century at that point and using email and being electronic and being so modern that she just couldn't contain herself.
Well,
God
bless her.
God bless her. I thought that was great.
Sometimes you probably could beat the email because it may take a few minutes to work through the system.
Exactly. Well, we have people who get very upset. Now, because they, you know, a message gets sent out and they're in somebody else's office. They're sitting like in their colleague's office next door working on something. That person gets an email that was sent to both of them. They race back to their desk and they don't have it yet. You know, it was sent to 300 people. It's got an attachment. It takes a while to work because we have to.
They're an A and the other guy's a Z.
Exactly. And we take them in whatever order they were sent out. And we, of course, scrub each one for viruses and all the spam threats and all the other thing. That takes a second or two per message. So if there's 300 messages, that's 300 or 600 seconds. Now that's 10 minutes.
Right.
I can't help that unless Saunders College of Business is willing to spend way too much money. And even I think it's too much money. To buy an infinitely faster server, it's going to take time to deliver 300 giant messages. Somebody's going to have to wait.
I had a client just call me, matter of fact, Friday. Mm-hmm. Said, "I'm very concerned." I go, "What seems to be the problem?" I go, "Well, I sent out this email, and the time, it's saying, you know, like, I sent it at 1, and it's saying 4 o'clock. Or, you know, 2 o'clock. Pick a time. Right. It was different than what I said, so? No, it's the wrong time. I said, "How do you know that?" Well, because I'm sending it, and I see this time, and it's saying it a wholly different time.
Does it say date sent or date received?
No, but what I pointed out to her, I says, "All right, where's your server located?"
Yeah.
"I don't know." I says, "It could be out on the West Coast. Do you really know where that server's sitting? It could be sitting in, you know, anywhere. It's called the World Wide Web. There are different time zones than just you."
Right.
"Oh, I didn't think about that."
Or the server is simply misset.
Yeah, that too.
Particularly around the daylight savings time.
Or you may catch it when it takes a half an hour or so to get from you to the other end.
Right. Particularly this time when daylight savings time was different. A lot of places screwed it up.
Yep.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you 20 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Can I have another piece of paper?
Oh, for heaven's sake, yes.
Somebody stole my mouse pad.
I'm done with that one. Nobody stole your mouse pad.
Yes, they did. We had a real nice mouse pad here.
Yeah, not for nothing, but if you turn it to the side that's not printed on.
No, it works just as well on this side.
All right. Oh, that's
actually a little better if the surface is too plain, the optical sensor can't track it.
He doesn't have optical, though, so it doesn't matter.
Ooh, all right. It's an old-fashioned mechanical.
It's a mechanical mouse.
A 20th century mouse.
What's happening is
20th century.
We've gone to optical mice on the bottom, so there's no ball to get gunked up that you have to clean all the time. But now the wheels and balls on the top are getting gunked up.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
And those don't come out. Yep. You can't clean them as easy.
But it's hard to get them back in.
Right, yeah.
They come out easy.
Yeah. Ask me how I know.
Yeah. You need a button. Ask me how I know. I have that problem now. In Second Life, I'm so used to, there are things you do with the mouse, things you do with the left hand, things you do with the right hand to move around. And when I'm on the Mac, I don't have a mouse.
Real men double click.
A second mouse. And so
I'm using the trackpad in front of the keyboard.
Yeah. And of course,
you can turn on.
And you got to use the function key to get
control,
page up, page down, and everything else.
Two fingers and click will be a right click in your mouse preferences. So if you use two,
I just tap two fingers and it's a right click.
Yeah, you can set that on too. Yeah.
Well, they've also got this ball thing now. Lyndon was showing it. You can move it around and
a three-dimensional ball. Yeah,
so, yeah.
Well, no, it's not even a ball. It looks like
I've seen those for 3D CAD work.
Gear shift.
Yeah,
sort of.
It's
sort of gear around. Shift. It's weird. Yeah. But that, I found that very helpful, though, on the Second Life. They have that showcase, and then there's a tutorial. In the tutorial, they teach you a lot of stuff for folks, because we're headed that way, folks.
Yeah, we are. We're building an not an island, but a building on Second Life. Again, generously donated by the lovely and talented Larry Dugan, who was here a couple of weeks ago, and his minion, Rob, has built us a building in. We're getting that set up, so it's very nice.
We're also trying to help out when we're not on. As folks know, Wham has the Buffalo Bills coming this season to Wham, and during those time frames when they've got the 1 o'clock games, we're not going to be on. So this is where we've come up with the idea to do something on Second Life, where we can have a meeting room and get together and talk to folks and, you know, go over their questions and everything else.
So we can do all of those things, and we're having fun building it. Yeah, it's been fun.
What was it, 1 o'clock or so when
two I met o'clock.
Up, 2 o'clock that I Trust met up me. With you?
I thought I was going to get another one of those calls. We famously told a story when first hooked up Dave with broadband. I showed him how to do things and go places. And as I left, I said to him, it was 11 o'clock at night, and I know him. I said, no, it was 10. I said, do you want me to call you at 11 to go to bed? No, I'll be fine. Are you sure you're... No, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm fine. Okay, 6 o'clock in the morning, my phone rings.
Oh, no.
I pick it up, and I hear... morning, Dave. How are you?
And I slept, and I went through 2 wake-up calls. I had a wake-up service at the time.
Yeah.
But I was already awake when they called. So I was like, don't need it. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm up.
My butt was dragging that day. But I had a lot of fun that night, though.
See, and that's what counts. And the same thing was true when we did Second Life. We furnished a good part of the second floor, which is the Soundbites floor. So first floor will be the Security Tango. First floor will be Tech Smart.
Get them to set that up so folks can do a search on Soundbites.
Right.
And then get us to it.
Right. Or we can put up a slural. That'll be possible, too. Anyway, Microsoft, as you may or may not know and probably don't care, those of you who use the MSN music service, both of you, Microsoft has decided to switch off. They are dumping the MSN music service, and that means all the tracks you bought will stop working.
No.
Yes?
Because you didn't buy them, you're renting them.
You only rent them. Microsoft last week told former MSN music customers that it would no longer support the DRM licenses for tracks bought through the failed music sales portal. That news meant that customers would lose the ability to play the music they own once their existing computer ceased to function, because every time you play it, it goes back. Well, I think you can play it X number of times without it going back, but then it has to go back. So if you're off the net for a weekend, you know, you take your laptop to the lake or whatever, you can still play your music. But when you come back, you better hook up. The company's decision has attracted the ire of digital lobbying group, the EFF, founded by former Grateful Dead lyricist John Perry Barlow. In a letter to Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer, the Electronic Freedom Foundation said, while this announcement has directly affected MSN Music customers, users of other Microsoft products, particularly current and prospective Zoom customers, are deeply concerned as well. Your customers are forced to ask, if Microsoft treats its MSN Music customers so shabbily, is there any reason to suppose that it will treat other customers any better? The EFF is demanding that Microsoft issue an apology and a refund to its customers. It also insists the company should ensure that all MSN Music buyers have or have permanent access to receipts identifying dates, amounts, and titles purchased so they have proof of purchase in case of any future problems proving they owned their tracks. That's true. If you have no digital rights to that song anymore, then what's to prevent the RIA coming in and saying, you've stolen this music? So the EFF wants Microsoft to work to eliminate DRM from the Zoom music catalog in order to ensure customers don't have to suffer such inconvenience and loss. Again, Microsoft has said customers should back up their music libraries by burning them to CDs. There is no certainty that all relevant copyright owners would agree that making such backup copies without permission is lawful, responded the EFF. You can certainly burn all of your music to CDs. You, however, have no receipt that says you bought that music. So how do you prove you own it? In addition, copyright law, and I'm sure that the IRC channel is just burning up with this. If they care one way or the other, they're even listening. They often just get off on their own topics in there. And so, but it is still murky as to whether or not you have the right to take something and burn it, a song you bought online, and burn it to a CD. I know that you're allowed to. I know that you physically can, rather, but that doesn't mean you're allowed to, that legally.
What's the, there's a conflict in the different laws. Copyright law allows you to make a legal backup. The DMCA.
A legal backup, right, not a, illegal backup.
Right, right, yeah. It is legal to make a backup of something you bought. However, the DMCA says it's illegal to break copy protection to make a legal backup.
Right, right. So you can make the backup, you just can't break their copy protection to do it.
Yeah.
Right. So it's an interesting problem, and of course, it's over and over and over and over again. We've been through it a million times. The people who don't want to think of themselves as thieves have all kinds of excuses as to why they're allowed to do what they're doing.
And then you ask them the question, would you walk into a store and pick up a CD and walk out again?
Right.
Or would you walk into a store, pick up a CD, put it in the preview box there, plug your computer into it, record it, and walk out of the store again? No.
And their arguments seem to boil down to, because I can. Well, you know what? And then they get upset when somebody says, well, you can be arrested for that. Well, if I leave my front door unlocked accidentally, you can walk into my house. I then can shoot you dead.
And probably would.
And would. So, and then you would feel yourself ill-used.
Well, first the dog would get at you.
Well, right, right. I would never have to go for the guns. You'd be a nice midnight snack for two very large, very protective dogs.
Hey.
Well, what was that argument we had once about Dave? You used to have a parrot that talked.
Oh, Casey.
And if you knock on Dave's door and the parrot says, come in, does that give you legal permission to come in?
He would, too.
No. I would argue no, because he doesn't have
right of ownership or something.
He doesn't own the house.
Yes, there's a term for it that's escaping me right now.
Right, mm-hmm. But he lives there.
Yeah, he lives there.
He doesn't have authority.
Doesn't have the authority, yeah. Right. So, yeah, someone was using that as an argument about using open Wi-Fi, because it is illegal to use someone's network without their permission, period. Whether it's Wi-Fi, whether it's wired, whether it's anything. That's the law.
Right.
But if you have an open Wi-Fi, the DHCP server in that router is giving you permission to use the network.
And that's interesting, too, because the Telecommunications Act of 1934 says the airwaves, which is what Wi-Fi uses, is public domain.
Right. You can use the airwaves. You just can't use their network.
Right. Because eventually it goes off the air into the wires, which are no longer.
But I'm not touching their wires. I'm using the airwaves.
Yeah. See, that's where you get into all of this. It's still illegal.
And that's where everything is murky.
Yeah. All right. We're going to go to the phones. We have Ed from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Yes. Good morning, gentlemen. Another excellent show as always. Here's my question. It's actually in two part. I'd like to go to archive.org and listen to some of the music on there.
Love that site.
Oh, yeah. It's great. The books. I love to download the books and listen to them on a little MP3 player. I mean, it's great. I mean, it's all supposedly public domain stuff, so there shouldn't be anything involved.
Right.
And I recall from when I was a kid, you know, when we used to, you know, if you couldn't afford to go out and buy a record back when they produced records and they had access to a tape recorder, you could just, you know, set a mic up and record something off the air. And, you know, you didn't think anything of it because obviously it was broadcast. You thought that.
That didn't make it legal. It just meant.
Just meant that
you did it.
And some of those laws were
amended
and made more clear. What's the word I want?
Okay. Clarified.
Thank you.
Sure.
Back in the VHS days, when football, right? Sued VHS,
right?
You know, for people videotaping footballs, football shows, games. Sorry. in the beginning of
football shows,
yeah. And, you know, in the beginning of the show, the thing about you can't reproduce this, and the beginning of movies, you can't reproduce this. That you're allowed to make a copy for your own private viewing in your own private house. The phrase they always use was not for public performance.
Right.
And for years, public wasn't defined.
Right.
The FCC has since defined public, meaning more than 10. So if you have 11 people in your house watching a football game, you are breaking the law.
I believe it's 11 non family members.
Right, non-family.
Not immediate family.
Not immediate family members,
if you've
yeah.
got 12 kids, you can still watch
right.
a Disney
so
movie.
So that becomes a public performance and is therefore illegal, which is how they got a lot of bars that were just turning the TV on to watch the game at the bar. They were able to sue the bars into not doing that, so now the bars right. had to buy a license from right. the...
But to get back yeah. to your question, Ed.
Yes, if the user is just using this material from themselves, I don't understand the legality of it. I mean, if it's broadcast material, and obviously if they put it over a radio or whatever for you to listen to, and you want to retain a copy, how different is that from capturing something on TiVo? I mean, if you capture something on TiVo, you've just made a copy of it, and, you know, they don't seem to say anything about, well...
Well, they are, yeah. The movie people and TV people are trying to sue TiVo because that is an illegal copy.
Really?
They feel.
As well?
Right.
Yeah.
What about the legalities? Like, I know you guys are big Linux fans. There has to be some software within that type of programming that it gets extremely close to what Microsoft produces. Now, why aren't they jumping on that saying, well, you're plagiarizing our software?
They've tried.
The Lindos lawsuit.
Right. They've tried over and over and over again SEO. And lost in court.
Mm-hmm.
See, none of this has to do with anything involving... common sense, or wouldn't it be nice if, and you know,
or the rights of Americans,
right? Yeah. And ponies and rainbows. What it has to do with is the law,
and who gets
the law.
And who
the
gets
law.
Paid. Now, when you listen to a song on the radio station paid the copyright holder to play that song,
mm-hmm.
and you did right. not pay for a copy of that song. You just right. you the radio station paid for a license to play it, not for you to make a copy.
Now, for instance, many many years ago, I had a server. That served up via FTP, served up old-time radio shows,
mm-hmm.
all of which were out of copyright, I thought. I got a message from one particular guy who said, I own the copyright to The Shadow, so you can't send that out anymore. I wrote back to him and said, I would be happy to, but I need documentation. You can't just tell me you own the copyright. Never heard from him again.
How much money did he get from people that just paid him?
Exactly. About 6 months later, I got another message from a different guy. From a different guy who said, I represent Street & Smith. We still own the copyright to The Shadow. Cease and desist. I said, send me the paperwork and I'll be glad to do that. They did. I did.
Yep.
Can I hit you with a browser question?
Yeah.
I still run an old version of Windows 2000 Pro, and it has IE6 on it. I wanted to put a little different browser on it to tinker around to see, you know, what would perform better with it. In your experiences running with an old Windows 2000 program, what would be about the best browser that you could think
Firefox.
Of?
Firefox.
Firefox?
I'd still say Firefox.
Does it run on 2000? I'm checking
yeah.
system requirements.
Yeah, it does.
Okay. Thank you very much.
There you go.
It.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right.
The only reason I know is I just had machine in with 2000 on it, and that's what I installed for them,
yep.
the Firefox and the Thunderbird, so they didn't have to use IE and Outlook Express.
Which they stopped patching for 2000, didn't they? It's even less secure.
Yep. Right.
But going back to copyright law for a second, we hear stories about Disney, the company pushing copyright extension.
Right.
Copyright currently runs 75 years after the death of the copyright holder.
Right.
And it was started out as 20 and then 30, then 50. Every time Mickey Mouse gets close to being out of copyright.
The law changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Ed brought up an interesting point. Part of his question was to do with personal use. And I see we're running out of time, but I've never seen the copy police knock on anybody's door. Never heard anybody even know somebody who knew somebody that had that happen.
Oh, I have.
Me.
Yep.
Really?
Absolutely.
I know of a couple
over
folks.
And over. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. 40 minutes after the hour of Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We had a caller call in during the break and ask for us to repeat the website where you can download all the free books and audio podcasts. It's archive.org, A-R-C-H-I-V-E, excuse me, I don't even remember eating that, .org. And there's an amazing amount of stuff on there that is all out of copyright and available for your downloading and listening and reading pleasure.
Lawfully for free.
Lawfully for free. Archive.org. Steve will put a link up in the...
And we have had it before.
Oh, we've had it before.
There
so
is more there stuff is. On that site than anyone can listen to in a lifetime.
My favorite part of it is the Wayback Machine.
Yep.
You can type in any URL to any site, and it will show you what it used to look like in the past. It's actually very, very cool. So, yeah, it's got audio. It's got live music.
They have something called moving images.
Right. It's got text.
we used to call those movies.
Movies, yeah.
Yeah, we used to call them movies.
And cartoons.
As cartoons, as just all kinds of interesting and fascinating stuff.
438 ephemeral films.
I'd like to suggest the old Betty Boop cartoons, the ones that were before
the
code.
Yeah, right.
It's amazing what they got away with in the 20s.
Oh, man. You have to be a little careful of those. Dave was kind enough to get me the VHS set, and we watched all of those, and they were not, let's say, politically correct at one point.
Right. Some of the old Warner Brothers cartoons, too.
Yeah.
Especially during the war with Bugs Bunny, you know, killing the bad guys in a very vulgar and profane way.
Yeah,
yeah, talking about them in a not particularly polite way.
And we could talk about that site the rest of the show, just to give an idea how much is on there.
Yeah, it's astonishing the amount of stuff that's there. Let's get back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul in Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Very entertaining show. The question is, I just hooked up a HP all-in-one series desk jet printer using Ubuntu software on a compact. It printed fine. It's got a scanner on it. And then I thought, my God, I got to install the software to get the other things working. And the CD is only for Windows or Mac OS. So I went online. I did find a link on the HP website called the SourceForge.
Sure.
And I downloaded a installer program. But the problem I'm having with Ubuntu in general is just what's happening. It's on my desktop, but I don't know how to open it. I don't know what to open it with.
If you double-click on it, what happens?
Well, I tried to open it with so many things.
No, if you double-click on it, what happens?
Okay, right now, opens into a BitTorrent. Save location for BitTorrent session.
He downloaded the torrent file.
Right.
A torrent descriptor.
Right. What it sounds like you've downloaded, a torrent file is this. Yeah. A lot of software is very, very, very large.
Yeah.
And the way you get the actual file, you can either just download it directly or you can do something called BitTorrent. Lots and lots of people host the file. The BitTorrent client goes out and grabs pieces from everybody. So you're not downloading it all from one person. You're downloading it from 50 people. That saves their bandwidth, saves your bandwidth. It may take a while to download, but you get it all without using a whole lot of bandwidth from any one person. And that's the way they do it.
That's legitimate file sharing.
Right. So, under Linux, do you have the brand new one?
I've got the Ubuntu 7. It was the October.
Right, so 7.10. So you're probably using Azurius.
So you need a BitTorrent client to download that actual file. A better thing might do is go back to SourceForge and click another link that actually points to the file and not a BitTorrent file.
I think I did do that. I think what I'm trying to say I've done wrong and I struggle with is I think they have files on my desktop, but then it was open with. And I've screwed up somewhere. You know how once you
it always opens. That goes back to other issues.
Let's solve his problem first. The program you want to use to open a BitTorrent with is Azurius, I believe. If you go to Applications, Internet, it'll be right there near the top. Obviously, it's probably the second one.
He also may have downloaded the source code and not the installer.
If it says it's looking for a BitTorrent client, that's what he needs to open it with.
Right. Or go back to SourceForge and download the installer, the compiled installer.
Right. But that still doesn't solve his problem of having opened it with the wrong thing and now he has to set the right thing. But the correct thing is Azurius. Got to take a break. 50 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM.
Rating, but...
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton, showing Steve where the on-air light is right now.
Yeah, if you see the little light on, you don't talk. Or if you see this little block thing go to red, you don't talk. It's 54 minutes
after answering Chris's question.
We are sound bites. I don't care. When you see that go red, you don't talk. To go back, we had one of the people in the forum saying they couldn't listen to the stream because it requires ActiveX. I do not believe that's true. I am listening to it on Linux.
It requires the Windows Media Player plugin.
If you're on Windows, that's what they recommend. But For the Mac, you don't require ActiveX. For Linux, you don't require ActiveX. I'm not entirely certain.
You need the Flip for Mac Windows Media Player for plugin,
right?
Which is free.
Or MPlayer.
Windows or MPlayer.
MPlayer certainly works. VLC works.
Yep.
So I'm a little confused by all of that, but all right, that's whatever. We're back, and hey, guess what? Kids, grab those footy jammies, grab your mug of hot cocoa, sit in Indian style in a semicircle around the rocker, because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, you got me smoked up about this one.
Oh, here we go.
Well, I think it will bother you guys, too. I mean, it's more Steve than you, Nick.
Steve bothers me all the time.
Well, that's a personal issue.
I'm sorry.
Anyways, we won't go there. No, it's funny. We were just talking on the boards last week about this, is when you go to a client's house. Now, as folks know, a little history here, I used to be an ex-smoker. I mean, mm-hmm. I gave up cigarettes back in the 80s, and then once in a while, I'd like a good gar.
You mean you are an ex-smoker?
Yes, I am, sir. Okay. And, but
yeah,
when
I used to be an ex means you'd smoke now.
Oh, that's true, too. Right. But anyways, I go to a client's house, and this guy is a chain smoker. He says, do you mind if I watch you? I said, no. Now, when I got there, he already had this one cigarette lit up. And he's asking me, watching over me, and he grabs another one, not even putting it out yet. And he's sitting there lighting it with the other cigarette.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, I turned to him. I says, excuse me. I says, would you mind, you know, just stepping back? Because he's leaning right over my shoulder and blowing the smoke over my shoulder. Not for nothing.
Well, see, what you do, you tell them it's really bad for the computer, and they'll quit. I've seen pet owners. The husband complains for years about the wife smoking. No, nothing. The cat dies of leukemia. She quits.
Yeah.
Yeah, Atuk and I were just talking about this, like I say, last week, though, on the boards. And again, I ran into it just this week. This guy is literally not even putting the one out yet and letting it rest. He's lighting up another one. I had to turn to him. I says, excuse me. You know, the worst thing is the reform smoker, because they go overboard. No, I won't do that. I go into people's homes, and it's their home. I'm there as a guest working on the computer. But in the same token, I don't need it blown in my face.
Right.
And if I ask you to step outside or go in another room, I don't care. It's your house, but I don't need it being blown in me. And I'm going to put up, I've got some pictures. And for you folks that do smoke and the folks that used to smoke, be aware, because these pictures that I'm going to put up literally will turn your stomach. It's a CPU fan that I got a close-up shot of that we were working on just a week or so ago of a heavy smoker. And if you don't think this is bad for you and your lungs in a confined area, if you want to smoke, go outside. But inside the homes, it builds up. This fan is so caked with tar and nicotine mm-hmm. on the fins. It was weighting it down that it couldn't turn the fins fast enough, and it caused the computer to overheat. And then they get upset. Well, it's not that old of a computer. It's just a little over a year. But yeah, a little over a year. You've been inside, closed up. Don't open any windows or doors. You're smoking two packs a day, say, right in front of that computer. It's a big vacuum cleaner. It sucks it in. And all that tar and nicotine's got to stick somewheres. And that's where it's sticking. Onto the fins and everything else. You put it in there. Those types of machines, I can't wait to quick get them out of the shop because they stink.
All right. There we are.
So it's bad for your computer. Don't smoke near it.
All right, kids, get those footy jammies off. Put your wash out your mugs. If we can hold him down and inject him, we'll put Uncle Dave back to sleep for another week. We want to thank you all for having put up with that. We are going to take a break. It is time for the stuff you really listen to Wham for, the news, the weather, the sports, all the important things that go on out in the big blue room. We'll be talking about those. On the other side of all of that, we'll have our poll. We'll have a lot more of your questions. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. If you're not on the line, why not? We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We are the greatest computer show in the known universe. Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Stay tuned, and we will be right back. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Every week on the website at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, we do a poll. Last week's poll was about, would you prefer to buy a new computer with Vista or XP? 342 of you voted, making it number 99 on the all-time hit list. Thanks to each and every one of you who voted. The winner overall, 62% of you said XP. 17% of you said Linux. 11% of you said Mac, also smart people. 8% said Vista, and 2% said other. This week's poll comes from an interesting story online. Apple's ploy to gain browser share by pushing Safari to users with an update tool normally used for security fixes failed to boost its overall share, although its share went up for a while. But according to one metrics company, the share actually fell last month to 5.5%, down from March's 5.8%, while Microsoft's Internet Explorer increased its dominance by growing to 76% from March's 74.8%. It was the first time that IE gained share since October of 2007. In late March, Apple started using its Windows Software Update tool, previously used only to provide patches for iTunes and QuickTime, to offer Safari 3.1 to users who did not have the browser already installed. The tactic got the attention of, among others, Mozilla Corp CEO John Lilly, who blasted Apple for using the security updater to push Safari. In a long blog post, Lilly said the practice undermines the Internet and borders on malware distribution practices. A few weeks later, Apple modified the tool to separate updates from already installed programs from offers to install new software. Mozilla saw it as a concession to Apple's critics and applauded the change even as it asked for more. Now Apple needs to stop checking the box for new software items by default. The use of the updater, however, did boost the Safari share for Windows, according to Net Applications data, which it collects from traffic to thousands of sites run by its clients. On Windows, Safari's 3.1's share tripled last month, climbing to 0.21% from March's 0.07%. Even so, Safari's overall share dipped. The vast majority of Safari users own Macs and run Mac OS X. Firefox's share also fell in April by nearly a percentage point from the month prior. The open source browser, which had accounted for 17.8% of the uses marked in March, dropped to 17% last month. It was the largest one-month drop in the browser's market share since May 2007 and put an end to a run of five consecutive months of gain. IE, meanwhile, reversed its long slide last month. In April, Microsoft's browser increased its market share by more than a percentage point over March, the largest gain since Net Applications began publishing browser data in May of 2006. Ironically, the bulk of IE's increase in April came from the older IE6, which boosted its share from 28.9% to 30%. The newer IE7, meanwhile, climbed just 0.1% during the same period. Both Mozilla and Firefox are working on the next versions of their respective browsers. Firefox 3.0, which is still in testing, is expected to go final before the end of June, while IE8 will wrap sometime this year, Microsoft has said. This has raised two questions in the community, one of which Steve brought up earlier, which is how many people change the way their browser announces itself to pretend to be IE for all those sites that insist on IE only, even though they work perfectly well with other browsers. And the second one is how much of that is Microsoft once again gaming the system by constantly going to those sites from their own browser from all over the world. So we don't know what the truth of that is. So the question here is, are you using Internet Explorer? The choices are yes. Why? I stopped, but I started again, or never had it, never will. So far, oh dear, I never did hit enter on that. We've got a whole bunch of polls, the number one choice so far being yes. Why? 51% of you so far, it seems to be, followed by never had it, never will, and I stopped, but I started again. Oh, yes, why is down to 45%. 42% never had it, never will. Now, when you're done with that, take a look at the little yellow box underneath. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
I love Woody Woodpecker. And you will be able to put in an entire comment, up to 255 characters, about why you actually use Internet Explorer. And I've been a little lax on my newsletter. I've had life issues, and I'm about done with them. So the newsletter will be coming back strong very, very shortly. But I put out a newsletter, and you can search the old newsletters and join in on the forums and do all of that fun stuff. I have to go look at the Soundbite forums this morning. I apologize. We've been running this one thread, which is now up to 60 zillion messages under fun Dolores stuff. And Dolores, of course, the queen of it all. There's no question there. but it's under fun stuff, and it's called Find This. There are 61 pages, over 900 replies, 20,000 views. It's just gigantic, where we put up pictures of something, and people then have to guess who or what that is.
Where it is.
Dolores is the queen of this game. I love Dolores. I have actually met Dolores. I am in love with her. I admit it in public here. But she's scary. She's scary, frightening, scary. Let's just say that right now.
In a good way.
And I suppose it goes, she's just scary. You put up a picture and she knows the answer. She's hooked to some giant supercomputer somewhere. I don't quite get that. She's really got it nailed for this game. But we're in the game right now, and I just put one up, and I have to go look at the responses after the show today, and I will do that. But that's Soundbites. That's Ask Nick. AskNick.com. He's got nothing. He's phoning it in today. And then there we are. So let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe, who's patiently been waiting on his cell phone since somewhere early in February. Joe, what's your question?
My question is, I downloaded RealPlayer, and every time I open it up, it tells me that I'm not online. I'm using Mozilla Firefox, and I can't seem to get the link to the internet.
RealPlayer doesn't need Mozilla to be working, or Firefox, or a browser.
Yeah.
Although if Firefox works and loads web pages, then you are online and RealPlayer is reporting wrong.
Yeah. Well, do you have the fix for that? Is there somewhere I can look?
Are you actually online? Can you determine that by using your browser?
Yeah, I'm downloading mail and everything.
Okay.
When I open this up.
RealPlayer may have, several things could have happened. One is you may have it set to not be online. I don't have RealPlayer in front of me, so I can't lead you right to it. But somewhere in the preferences, there is a choice to play offline, I believe. In addition,
firewall.
It could be your firewall is blocking it.
It uses ports 56,600 and something.
Right.
So those ports have to be open on your firewall.
Right. Really, I don't quite know why.
I don't even like using RealPlayer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know quite why you would want to use.
Some sites require RealPlayer for the type of video they're using. The three main common video, four now, didn't expect the Spanish Inquisition. It used to be Real, Windows Media, QuickTime, and now Flash is pretty much taking over everything.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll try Flash then.
Well, it depends on the site. Some sites offer you choices, asking you which player you want to use. Some
good
of them
programming.
Yeah, good programming by that site will ask you which player you want to use.
Give you a choice.
Otherwise, you may not have a choice, and you have to use the player they use.
There are
scattered reports of the same thing all over the net, and a lot of times it does point to your firewall.
There is a program called Real Alternative that plays real media, but it doesn't require RealPlayer, which is a terrible, terrible product.
And how many bugs have they found in RealPlayer and security?
It's horribly
packs?
Badly written, and it takes over your machine. I would download Real Alternative, uninstall RealPlayer, and then install Real Alternative. We'll put up the URL shortly.
Gotcha. Okay. Thanks, guys.
There you go. RealPlayer is not. It's just
it's not ready for prime time.
A horrible product. All right, our next caller is Bob from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I have a Windows 2000 on one of the computers. And earlier you had a fellow on talking about Thunderbird. I've installed Thunderbird on this, but it never opens. It kind of clicks. I get the little hourglass thing, and then it just goes away and never, ever opens.
Do you have a firewall that's maybe blocking it?
No, it's, I've got other laptops connected. It's through a router, through DSL. It opens fine on the other ones. I've got Mozilla Firefox. That works fine. I've got Mozilla for the email. That works fine.
Could have been a bad download or a bad install.
Yeah.
I've uninstalled it and installed it a few different times, and it's still, it just never, ever opens.
We have to actually see it to know what to do about that, but I do know that Thunderbird works on Windows 2000, so it's not that. But I can't tell you
without seeing the machine and seeing what it's doing.
It's clearly
what else is running that might be conflicting with it.
Exactly.
There's a whole host of issues without seeing the machine that we can't really answer.
I'm sorry. You're going to have to take it to somebody and have them take a look at it.
Have you checked through the Thunderbird online forums? There may be someone that has similar issues. Let me just try a little Google. Google is your friend. Yeah.
All right, our next caller is Tom from Wolcott, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Well, now that I've got another real quick one, I get my email on Verizon on their website. I don't use Thunderbird or anything else. What kind of danger is that?
Well, in order to view mail on the website, you are using a browser.
Correct.
And that probably has JavaScript running. So if somebody sends you a malicious email that has a virus in it and you open it, you're caught.
Okay. It goes as text. It offers me the choice to open the HTML, and I generally don't.
That's a good thing. Yeah.
That's a very good thing.
Okay.
The other, not really danger, but the issue there is Frontier limits the amount of space you have, and for all ISPs do, so you can't store that much mail on their servers. That's right. one reason people
one
like...
One of the drawbacks.
One of the drawbacks. People like downloading it to their own computer. They can store as much mail as they want.
Okay.
Tom, what browser are you using?
Firefox.
Firefox has a great plugin called NoScript, NO-script. And that will allow you to stop any scripts from running that will keep your machine safer than otherwise.
I have seen that. Yeah, I have to.
The problem is a lot of good websites use scripting for good things.
Yeah.
So you end up creating an exception list of things you want to use scripting and things you don't.
I wouldn't call it a problem. I've noticed some scripts that I don't run, but you know what? I haven't missed them.
Right.
Okay. I'll have to check that out. Now, the reason I really called here is my wife's laptop here. She's got Windows XP with the Media Center Edition with Service Pack 2.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Came with Symantec, Norton Antivirus.
Get rid of that.
Well, yeah, we ran it to the end of it, you know, before they said, now we've got to start paying. So I went to ABG. Now the websites run so slow. So now I tried to
tell you what, Tom, hold on.
Yeah, hang
we're coming
on.
Up
we
got
to take
break.
A break, but stay on the line. We'll come back to you when we come back. Got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we've still got Tom on the line, who was in the middle of asking a question about your wife's laptop, XP Media Service Pack 2, Symantec Norton, runs real slow.
And you're going to be in deep doo-doo if you don't speed
well,
it
no,
up,
he
right?
Said.
Well, yeah. I run a administrator.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I went in and I deleted the Symantec. I downloaded.
Wait a minute. Did you delete it or uninstall it?
Uninstall it. Sorry, my bad.
All right.
Even that is tricky because it has a hard time uninstalling.
One thing that I would recommend.
It's a project, but supposedly it's all gone.
But this is what I was going to say. It isn't. Trust me.
Okay.
What you want to do is, even though it looks like it's gone, remnants are still there. Trust me.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What you want to do is, which will help a little more, is if you go to the Norton website, there is a removal tool.
Manually, and it removes all of the little subfiles. So they have the same
and
thing for Mac,
and even some of that,
too.
There are still remnants. But this is the safest thing I can tell you. Go to their website and get the removal tool also. Because like okay. I say, there's still stuff in the background running that can slow it down. And then you go to the website, download AVG.
That's what I did, and I ended up with 8.0, and it keeps telling me I got to pay after 30 days.
Yes, that is the pay version. The free version is 7.5.
Okay. Now, this pay version has slowed things to a crawl, and it's got a Yahoo web bar on there that I swear that I unchecked it to have it not.
Well, did you do the complete internet security or the free basic protection?
I did the free basic protection, and it came up with 8.0.
So well, three, yeah, there's three or four boxes there where you have to tell it, no, I want the free one. No, I really want the free one. I said I really want the free one, or they'd give you the big one.
Okay, now it gets better. So this morning I decide, okay, this pay one isn't the one I want. So I went back, and I followed the link from the security tangle, went all Got the free one. So now I download it on the other side, and then I move to the administrator to install it.
Yep.
When I open up the administrator, there's a box.
Let me rephrase that. They now have a free version 8. They didn't used to.
Okay.
Version 8 is now free also.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a pop-up from SpyBot saying there's a registry change, a thing called a little I, to go number one, another little I, and it says delete me. And I thought, well, that doesn't sound like something I want in my registry. So I said, don't make the registry change. So now I open the AVG free edition, and I get an error message. Won't load because it's missing this. The destination file is not available, and it's, guess what? That
i.1.i.
It may have been part of the anti-spyware protection in the new AVG. Is not recognized by SpyBot yet.
All right, what you can do to get around this right now?
Okay.
Is uninstall SpyBot.
Oh, okay.
Because sometimes, in fact, SpyBot warns you that if you have other anti-spyware programs loaded, you may get false positives.
Yeah.
Because it's seeing the other program's definition of what spyware is as spyware.
So uninstall it for right now. Matter of fact, another good one that works just as well is the super anti-spyware.
Okay.
So uninstall SpyBot, then do the AVG free, and then if you want, you can go either the super anti-spyware or go back to SpyBot.
Okay. Super anti-spyware?
Yeah, I like that one. I'm liking that one because it catches a lot of stuff. We've said before, the reason we were recommending, and I still do, AdAware and SpyBot, was because the two of them, one did into the registry, went deep, the other went deep into the files. Because no one of them did a good job of either.
Right.
Whereas the super anti-spyware seems to do a good job on both. Both the registry doing a deep clean into that along with memory and then into the files. So that's why I've been recommending that one program that seems to take over. And it does, I'd say, 90% good job of cleaning it all out. Nothing is 100%.
Okay.
But it's doing a far more efficient job. It doesn't hurt to still run AdAware and SpyBot on the side once in a while if you need be.
And so that's one of the caveats of running multiple, say, anti-spyware, multiple antivirus, is you get false positives because it sees the other program.
Too many. I had one client that had three antivirus programs on there thinking one was good, three should even be better.
Just because one is good doesn't mean three is better.
By itself, slow down your system tremendously.
Oh, boy, you want to talk about a crawl.
Tom, give those things a try. Thanks.
And let's.
Our next caller is Dan from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. I've got a laptop, an old laptop computer that I use at work. My primary output is spreadsheets. And when I send the documents to my printer, literally, I never know what I'm going to get as an output. I'll get half a page. I'll get a third of a page. I'll get the entire document the way I requested it. Very strange. I've never had a printer act like that. And I've reinstalled all of the software, all of the drivers. I've talked to the tech support
What printer is it?
It's a Lexmark, one of the 3 or 4-in-1 kinds of printers. Interfax.
How much memory do you have in your machine?
Not a lot.
There's part of your problem. Yeah. What happens with a lot of these printers, particularly the less expensive ones, you do not get memory in the printer.
All the processing is done on your computer.
Right.
Makes the printer cheaper.
The printer cheaper. There's no RAM in it. There's a much smaller, if any, real processor in it at all. The problem is you need a lot of RAM in order to process many of these files, particularly if they have charts or any type of graphing in them.
No, actually, these are very simple spreadsheets. I mean, I even have the same problem if I, like a one-page Word document.
Well, but that would be the same problem because it's coming off the same printer from the same machine. Part of the problem is if you have a lot of stuff loaded, or you don't have a lot of memory to begin with, or both, you end up having no additional space in which to process the document. So one thing you could try, of course, is closing everything else. And I mean everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing if it prints any better. The other thing you can do is add memory, but try... At first, at least, shutting everything else down and seeing if it now consistently will print.
What program are you printing with?
Right.
What program?
Yeah.
Microsoft Excel, their spreadsheets.
Yeah, Excel and Word are both big memory hogs.
Right. So that's a problem.
Half a gig minimum, a full gig is better.
Right. I've got, I think, like I say, it's an old laptop. It only had 128 in it when I got it.
Yep.
And then I got a 256.
Yep, even so.
To it, and that's maxed out.
Right, right. Right. Well, you like I said, if you close everything else out, you may not have a problem if it's a simple spreadsheet.
Or if you can go back to an older version of Office, say Office 2000, that didn't have as big of a system footprint as 2003 or 2007.
Okay. Have you ever...
Or a different program, OpenOffice.
...trying to blame that condition on a bad ink cartridge?
You wouldn't get that. If it was a bad ink cartridge, it might die in the middle of a page, but you then wouldn't be able to print another page.
Right, yeah, okay, that's...
Well, unless the printer doesn't know the cartridge is bad. There's a lot of the cartridges these days have chips in them to tell the printer if it's out of ink or not.
Mm.
So it thinks it's printing and prints a partial page, or it doesn't know it's printing.
Well, when you only get a partial page, does it print a lot of blank, or does it just shoot it out of the printer?
Yeah, it just shoots it out of
the... Then it's not the ink cartridge being bad.
Okay. You may also want to download the newer drivers rather than reinstall what's on came on the disk.
I've done that.
Yeah. I honestly think it's a memory issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a memory problem. I probably need a new laptop.
Well, if it's a laptop,
definitely need a new laptop. Tell your bosses we said so.
Yeah, try taking it to a different printer, especially a more expensive printer. Well, yeah, a more expensive printer that has its own processor in it.
And memory.
Right.
Yeah, that's usually the $500,000 printer.
Yeah, right, nowadays.
Yeah.
I'm going to go for the request of the new laptop.
Go for
there
it.
You go.
Tell them we're behind you 110%.
More power.
Man.
With 2 gig.
Yep. You remember when 128 megs was a lot of memory?
I remember getting that in the computer and having other people be jealous.
Yep.
All right, our next caller is Ann from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Ann. What's your question?
Hi. Back in December, I bought the Magellan Maestro 3140 GPS.
Yeah.
And the CD that came with it, I tried downloading the PLI manager, and I tried 3 separate computers, and I keep getting an error message. I wrote Magellan, and they sent a new CD, and we still have the same problem.
What's the error message?
It's the install shield engine, iKernel.exe, could not be installed. The system cannot find the file specified. I've tried, like I said, and I don't know.
What operating
system? I think it's Magellan's problem, or...
Well, it certainly sounds that
way. Well, the iShield is the Microsoft installer program, so it could be something in there. I'm posting a link. Posting a link on what to do when that doesn't work. What operating system do you have?
Windows XP Professional on all 3 computers.
You've tried to install it. Have you uninstalled from the old disk and tried to fresh install? Or are you just trying to put it over it? In other words, if you put the old CD in, you know, that wasn't working. They sent you the new one, and did you do an uninstall before installing the new?
No, because nothing's installed. None of the software's installed.
So the error comes as soon as you start the installer?
Yes, as soon as I try starting the Points of Interest download manager, it downloads, but it won't open.
Well, wait a minute. No, if you're downloading from something, you've already got the program installed.
Okay.
So is it an install error or is it a download error?
Well, that's, like I said, the error message I'm getting is that one, the install shield engine could not be installed.
You should only get that message when you're installing something. It doesn't have anything to do with downloading.
Okay. So how do I get this to work?
Well, what are you trying to install when you get that error?
Points of Interest manager.
So it's a part of the program. It's not the whole program. In other words, part of the program is still working for you. It's just a point of interest that's causing the issue.
Correct.
So there's something there that within the program, even though you download it, usually once you download it, then you've got to go into another part of the procedure that says update my point of interest.
Exactly, but I can never get to that point, not on any of the computers. So I'm thinking it's Magellan.
Yeah, if it doesn't work on 3 separate computers, I got to say it's
an issue with Magellan. Them, and they just don't want to own up to it.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I just wanted to call and make sure I've got some sort of ammunition to write them for the 3rd time. And
Well, you know what? You might also want to go on to the go to the Magellan website.
I've got another analogy here. It could be a corrupt temp file from a previous install. I've posted two links on our link list. If you go into your program files, common files, install shield folder, there may be something damaged in there. Also under C Windows Temp or whatever your temp directory is.
Okay.
So there may be something corrupted in that install shield that's trying to load something else.
And if that doesn't solve it, what you might want to do is go to the Magellan website and see if they've got a blog or a Q&A or FAQs and see if other folks are experiencing the same thing.
Okay.
They might have a workaround for it.
So, what's the cure for Ann's problem from what you're reading?
Deleting the corrupt temp files.
Delete those files.
Reinstall them. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Give it
Thank
a shot
so
and let us, yeah, let us know.
Very good. Yeah,
the trick All is right. always knowing
Thanks.
Which files are corrupted. It's obviously a corrupt file somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere.
So these two Microsoft Knowledge Base articles will point you in some directions to go to.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the mighty Chris Reich, who has again come in and generously given of his time and his talent to do the podcast, which are all up to date at the moment, except for the last one, which is currently uploading, I believe, and probably is the reason
their
connection is so slow. Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite.
This is the funky part of the show.
Get down, get funky, get up, take a shower. Our next caller is Marcy from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Marcy. What's your question?
Quick things. The Flash, for those who, yeah, not Flash, I mean Flash, the Real Player, for those who want to use it.
Right.
If you go under Preferences, Connection, you have to click Assume I'm Online. I had the same problem. But then there's the other thing, which a lot of people are having problems with, is then now you cannot play Flash videos on Real Player. So am I going to be able to do this on the Real alternative? Because I really don't want Real anymore.
Nobody wants Real anymore.
Well, you'd play you'd play Flash videos in the Flash player.
Well, for some
You need different players for each type of video.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean I just had to bring... Oh, okay.
You need the QuickTime player for QuickTime video. You need the Real player for Real video. The Flash player for Flash video.
And Marcy, you thought life was going to be easy.
At least they merged... At least they merged Flash and Shockwave, so now you don't need two separate players for that.
Right.
Okay. Well, now we've got a little second issue. Now, I know... the mouse is beginning to war. I'm on a spam war. I've discovered that there are more and more bits of spam because I decided I got fed up with this junk coming in. And I took a look at where this stuff was coming from. There are companies, real legitimate companies, whose computers are being taken over and becoming zombies.
Yes.
So I'm calling these people up and I'm telling them, say, guys, let me tell you, and I'm going to send you a little email with the extended information and say, look, you've got a zombie. And what can I'm going to send them like a little thing and say, can I send them some, where's the good place where I can send them information and say, this is their problem. This is what you need to do. I don't really want to have to block a legitimate company.
Almost every legitimate company on earth has an email address abuse@, or perhaps webmaster@, if you get a.
Oh, well, no, it's the only reason I know that it's coming because I look at the, the return path. Oh, right. My goodness, it's from this university. Mm-hmm.
Not be true because those paths and return addresses are very easily faked.
Well, if you dig deep enough, you can tell whether or not they're fake. If they're coming from a university or even a company, they're likely coming from either a student or a worker.
Okay. Well,
too many companies allow workers or students, well, students, of course, own their own machines, but allow workers to run as administrator, which means they can be very easily taken over.
Okay.
And there's, aside from somebody going to every single machine and cleaning it out every single day, that problem simply isn't going to go away until companies stop letting their people run as administrator.
Okay, because there was a small bank in Kentucky that sent me.
Yeah,
it was interesting stuff. And now I've got a teeny tiny construction company in, Washington.
Now, how dangerous is that? A bank getting turned into a zombie?
A bank I wouldn't do business with personally.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. And so I said, look, I sent you I found a real email that I can trust at your site. And I sent, your administrator the copy of the email, but I didn't know what else to tell him. You know, it's like I can go back and say, oh, okay, I now know I can tell you it's called a zombie. As far as I can tell, it looks like your computers have been compromised somewhere.
Right.
And I don't know what else to tell them because I
You've done way more than most people do, Marcy, and God bless you for that. But the reality is, many places, A, don't care.
Mm-hmm.
B, don't have anyone who really is a full-time administrator.
Yeah, well.
And C, even if they do, that person may not know enough.
Therein is the question, where can I send them? I mean, there's a Wikipedia site which gives, like, descriptions, but what do you do with that?
Well, what they have to do is hire
Spam House or some national spam clearing company that tries to handle this, but it's just unhandleable.
Well, they handle it by blocking it.
Yeah.
I mean, what she's talking about is how to...
Right,
how
every
do,
now...
Who do you send yep. them to get it
because
fixed?
Every now and then, Roadrunner will get blocked. The entire RR.com domain will get blocked.
But her question actually seems to be, Marcy, if I've got
how
you right.
I give them information
right.
that they can go fix it so that in case, for instance, I have a bank or a university I want to talk to and I don't want to have to block them on my spam list and stuff right. comes in like, why is this coming in? This is spam. Oh, my gosh.
What they need to do is hire somebody who has that knowledge. Now, they can hire them as a contractor
mm-hmm.
or a consultant, but they've got to hire somebody and that means they're going to be paying money and that's... Because this stuff is not often cut and paste. You can't just send somebody to a website. I can send you to a website that gives you the abstracts.
Well, yeah, kind of like, this is the information, guys. This is why
exactly.
this is a bad thing to be happening. And you need to hire somebody who knows how to do mm-hmm. what do I need to tell them? Because I'm not.
Yeah, there's...
Well, Marcy, what I'm trying to tell you, there isn't anywhere to send them. 90% of the time, particularly with a small company, like a small construction company, the webmaster or the person who sets the system up is either somebody they hired on a one-time basis or whichever secretary wasn't busy when the boss decided they needed a webmaster. So, unfortunately, there's no real place you can send them to teach them to be an administrator. They'd have to take classes. They'd have to learn all kinds of stuff. There's no cut and paste, follow these 8 steps and your machine will be fixed like the security tango. They can tango every machine, but they're going to have to go back and do it again and again and again and again because they haven't hardened their site. Got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites. 49 minutes after the hour, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And 54 minutes after the hour, we're Sound Bites. Our next caller is Norm from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Norm. What's your question?
You there?
Yeah, we are. Are you there?
Yeah, that just kind of went out on me for a second. Anyway, just wanted to say I really enjoy listening to your show, for one thing.
Thank you.
My question is, on my computer, I have Mozilla Firefox as my browser. I'm not sure if that has anything to do with this. But when I try to get on to, like, my Hotmail, I type in my password, and then what will happen is I get another screen where it comes up and it goes that the ID or the password is incorrect. I retype the password, and then I get into Hotmail. So it's not saving my ID or my password.
Have you changed it recently?
No. It's been the same since I got it.
Yeah, here's an interesting question. When was the last time you danced the security tango?
Less than a week ago. I danced it just about every week.
What you might want to do, Norm, is you're using Firefox, you said, to get into it?
Yeah.
You might want to check your passwords, you know, if you're storing passwords or filling in information, because Hotmail is, web-based.
Right.
What you might want to do is check your passwords and form fillings that you're doing for Hotmail.
Mm-hmm.
Delete it. You know, you can go in and delete certain entries for filling out forms and save passwords within Firefox.
Okay. How would I get to that?
It's preferences, security, something like that.
Yeah,
that's a big security hole in Firefox, is that anyone who sits down at your computer can see all your passwords.
And right. you want to go in there and maybe delete that one entry so it, you know, it might have gotten corrupt.
Yeah.
So go in, delete that one out, remove it, and then this way when you go back into Hotmail, it'll ask you again.
It's weird because it goes with some, you know, like for Yahoo Mail, I kind of get the same thing, but for other sites, like I go to Pepsi stuff, and that saves my password, my ID.
Yeah, you might want to try clearing those ones out that you're having just issues with, just those one.
Right.
And try going back into them, reset, and if it says, do you want to remember this? Say yes to that.
Okay.
Give that a shot.
Okay, terrific.
You don't suppose it's Microsoft saying you have to use IE to get into Hotmail, do you?
No, I was wondering
would they actually do that?
I was wondering if it might be a virus that's sending him to another site and capturing his password.
That's a possibility too, but like I say, that's the easy one to first try. And then, like you say, if that doesn't work, then go in to do the tango. Right.
I'm having precisely the same problem with Skype. It started yesterday. It's not accepting the password. So I'm going to do what Dave suggested. You're running a Mac. It's not going to be a virus. Not likely.
Not likely.
No, it could be.
But
it,
yeah, a corrupt preference file where it saves that password. Yeah, it
can be.
Yeah, and then on the Mac, it's the keychain program that lets you see your saved passwords.
I think we have time for Mitch from Livonia. Welcome, Mitch. What's your question?
Hi. I have actually two questions, but the first should be short. First one is an OpenOffice for the Calc program. I have workbooks that have a lot of sheets in it, and I would like to have the print default not to be all but the section.
The one tab as opposed to all tabs.
All tabs.
That's not an option in the print command?
I cannot find it. When it comes up on the print, you can switch it, but I'd like to have it as a default.
Right.
Because I create large...
Tools, options... Hold on a second. I'm trying to...
Yeah, whether it remembers that change last time or the next time you print, or whether it goes back to what it sets the default. A lot of times you can't change defaults like that.
Yeah, you can. It's in page style default somewhere. Something about the sheet or the organizer. It's under page style, though, I think. I don't have it in front of me, and I apologize, but try that. And then you can also set... print only selected sheets. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, the mighty and often asleep Rob Linton for graciously coming in here this evening, interrupting his nap time to come in here. And did I not say Chris Reich?
No, you did. I wanted to mention